Welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of the OM Podcast, where we are discussing all things mobile app development. And today we have a very special series of guests. We have the Gun iOS team comprising of Adam.
Hi.
Say something about yourself, Adam.
My name is Adam.
Welcome, Adam. Sean.
Hey, how's it going?
And James.
Hello.
And today we are discussing functional programming. Functional reactive programming? What is this? I don't know. That's why these guys are here. They're going to help me understand all of this. My name's Ben Lowndes. I'm the iOS team lead, and I should know the answers to these questions. Adam, would you like to get us started? What are we talking about today?
Sure. Well, I might even start one step behind that at step zero, where we talk about why the heck we want to talk about this at all. James and I are working on a team together. We've been using a framework called Reactive Cocoa to solve our problems for the last 6 months or so. And it's been a learning experience, but it's been really valuable as well. And we've learned some things that we think are going to be valuable in developing future apps and in kind of maintaining this app as we go. So this is a tool and a programming paradigm that we're really interested in. And it's a little bit different from the way you've traditionally written iOS and Mac apps. And so that's kind of why we're here to talk about our experiences and what we've learned.
So Reactive Cocoa, for those that don't know, what is Cocoa?
It's the sort of framework around the Apple apps.
Yeah, so Cocoa is sort of the framework that Apple uses for iOS and OS X apps. So Cocoa Touch is the framework on iOS, and Cocoa is the OS X framework.
So from that we can tell Reactive Cocoa is a reactive programming interface to the Cocoa APIs, is that correct?
Yeah, so it's sort of an extension on the Cocoa APIs to allow this sort of functional reactive programming to be used.
So what is functional reactive programming, and what does this mean from a high level relative to what the kind of programming that is more regularly done on the platforms?
So I might start by describing, so the main abstraction, the main tool that a framework like Reactive Cocoa similar reactive programming frameworks on other platforms give you is the idea of a stream, modeling things in your program as streams of values over time. So you can think of something like as you type text into a text field in your app, every time you add a character or delete a character, the text value of that text field has changed. So if you imagine a stream where a new value was sent and it's a string of characters, every time it changed. And then when you've typed in your full password and then you tap submit, then we just take the latest value and maybe we check that it's a secure password. And if it meets that check, then we, send it to log you in. So the core idea in reactive programming is this idea of there's actually a surprising number of problems that you can model in your program as a stream of values over time. You could think of the screens that you see, the different kind of views on your app. Each one of those could be a value over time. So I change to this screen, I change back to that screen, I go to the login screen, I go to the help screen. That's one thing that you could potentially model as a stream. There's also whether I'm logged in or not, or many other large and small things that we've found in using this kind of programming model in our app that have been, it's really interesting. So the benefit of having that is once you've got these streams of values over time, now you can combine them in interesting ways and transform them and get new streams and ultimately display things on on the user interface of your app that represent these streams flowing by. So it's quite a flexible and powerful tool, and we've been able to apply it to a lot of different things.
So I guess what constraints is reactive programming addressing that may have been present? What is the problem that it's solving?
Yeah, so I find that, especially recently with the way that we make apps for phones and, you know, on iOS, is that a lot of the things that we're working with are very asynchronous, specifically things like user input or network calls, things like that. And reactive programming really helps to more accurately model that in your code. So originally in just standard object-oriented code, you might find that it's hard to handle those kind of situations because it's not, it's you know, a sequence of steps that happen. But when you're waiting for, say, a callback from a network request, you can't just say, next, do this, because you don't know when it's going to happen. So reactive programming allows you to react to these events as they happen rather than, and also to code it in a way that's easy to read, and also instead of having, you know, callbacks everywhere and things in random places, it's a nice way of declaratively just saying what should happen when this event happens.
And most importantly, it's damn cool, right?
It's really cool.
This is the new hot sauce, right? Yeah, I mean, it's a funny thing because I think, you know, programming paradigms, OO programming, they have a long history and things seem to be cyclical to some degree. And when we look at the functional aspect of reactive programming, functional programming's been around, you know, a long, long time. And how does that fit into when we talk about things like this, we often saying functional reactive programming. What can you explain the functional side of things, Sean?
Well, when we represent everything as streams of data that come in from these inputs like API calls or from your input like a touch or anything like that, these streams of data can be transformed into more useful information by sort of chaining together functions. It's a really powerful way of sort of declaring what you want in reaction to these inputs. So you can make small reusable functions which transform all these states and compose them together in really powerful ways, which is, yeah, one of the core sort of ideas behind reactive programming. It's not to say that you can't use object-orientated programming styles and mix it in, but it does encourage this sort of more functional way of doing things.
And one of the things that's really cool is, like, take this example that we've kind of used a couple of times now of just like logging in, typing into a text field and logging into your app. We talked about it as basically you type in your email address, you type in your password. Maybe you're told whether your password's too secure enough or not, or whether maybe you mistyped your email. And then ultimately we send that off to the server, we get a response, and we change the screen based on whether you logged in successfully or not. So when I'm talking to you, it sounds like a fairly logical sequence of steps. But if you were to look at the code for that in a lot of apps, it's a mess. Like, it's, there's so many different ways that we have to kind of bring in these little bits of information from different points. We've got our text field on the screen. We've got some process somewhere that tells us whether the password's secure or not. We've got some other thing telling us that, oh, our app's actually just gone into the background because the user, you know, went to go find their password that they'd written down somewhere else. Or we do our networking stuff, which is a completely different bit of code. Like, there's all these disparate sources of information. And so what you end up with when you read the code is not a logical sequence of steps. It's like one little piece is up the top of this file and another little piece is way over there somewhere else in the project, and another piece was implemented in some third-party code that we brought in, and it's really difficult to get that full picture of what's going on. And so the functional aspect of this thing is something that lets us say, here's a function that does this, here's a function that does that, is the function that does something else. They all have a similar type in that they take similar inputs and return similar outputs. And now we can just link them all together, like steps in a sequence. This happens before that, which happens after that. And the reactive bit adds in the time-based element of what happens when the user goes to a different app to copy their really secure password that they want to paste back in, and what happens when it turns out the user's in airplane mode and so, you know, they can't actually log in at the moment because they haven't connected to the Wi-Fi or any of those kinds of things. So the reactive programming brings in that time-based element and at the same time lets all those unique steps stand on their own, and we just kind of link them together into a cohesive story.
I think one of the great things about Reactive Cocoa is that it really enables you to handle errors in a really nice way as well. So something with that login scenario, there could be any point in that chain where that could fail. I mean, you could have the network call could fail. There could be any number of errors in that case. And Reactive Cocoa allows you to sort of handle those in one specific spot rather than having to deal with handling each bit of different separate error in different spots and having to explicitly exit the control flow at that point. And it just really nicely encapsulates that error handling process.
So we've talked a lot about like why we like it and why we think it's cool. And there are, you know, some potential disadvantages of this approach as well, one of which is unfamiliarity. If you've learned how to do object-oriented programming, that's something you're going to know and it's like the first tool that you're going to reach for, whereas this whole functional reactive programming style may be something that you're not familiar with. And getting from what I know now to how do I effectively write this FRP code is potentially challenging. And so I'm interested in hearing from you guys, Sean, when you were first learning reactive programming and the concepts and the tools and stuff like that, like what was that like for you? Did it take you long to learn? Was it difficult?
Originally, when I was looking at it, it took me a while to get my head around it and I didn't really see the benefits initially. But it's one of those things that once you get your head around it, it clicks. And you start to sort of think in that way and you start to get really passionate about it. It looks like everyone that I've met that's used reactive programming seems to be an evangelist for it. So it's kind of like a disease you catch, or not a disease, something positive gives you, you need to have that passion to really look into it because you're not sort of immersed in it a lot. You have to sort of do a lot of work at home or whatever, your own personal stuff to get to that point where it clicked. But it took me a while, but once I understood it, I loved it.
How did you learn it? Like what kind of materials or, you know, were you looking at tutorials or reading stuff online? What was your process for learning it?
Where I was working at the time when I first used it, we had a lot of API calls and things, and it just wasn't working. Looked it up. Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw a video by a guy the creator of LinkPad, Joseph someone. And he explained really passionately all the problems that reactive programming solve. And there was just a whole heap of resources from there on like MSDN links and things like that. I think Microsoft community is really big on it. And that was back when I was doing work in C#. It seems like there's plenty of resources online to look at, and a lot of tools that let you play with it. And like LinkPad that just let you play with it in real time, and maybe even like playgrounds in Xcode now would like let you play with it and just sort of see these streams of data flowing through and observe it, things like that.
Yeah, I found there are quite a few resources out there. It can be hard to find up-to-date tutorials, especially on Reactive Cocoa, because it has changed a lot since it first came out, especially with the new Swift API, which there is quite little resources available for that. But personally, I just found jumping into it and just trying to start solving problems using it as being the best way to learn, particularly just because it is a different way of thinking. And to start off with, it's really hard to know where to go and where to start. And just reading through the documentation trying to find what functions you can use, what transforms are going to help in your problem. And yeah, that really made the difference for me, I think, was just immersing myself in FRP and trying to use it as much as possible.
I think it seems like there's a certain sort of opening up and blossoming of opportunities to use different programming paradigms in the iOS world at the moment. Historically, we've been very much pushed towards MVC. This is what Apple want us to use. This is what the default sort of layouts are encouraged. This is what the tutorials that they provide demonstrate. But if we just look at the most recent WWDC, there's been lots of talk about protocol-oriented programming. There's a huge amount of opportunities in Swift for functional programming, as I understand it. Playgrounds in Xcode represent a really great learning opportunity. And you see the community sort of growing and adopting different architectural styles, such as MVVM and Clean Architecture and Viper. And it's pretty exciting in programming terms to have an opportunity to sort of broaden out your spectrum of opportunity for implementation and not feel like you're getting pushed down the MVC down the MVC tunnel.
Yeah, I think recently, particularly, the community's just been really bringing out a lot of new ideas, and particularly open source has in iOS and Objective-C has really taken off in the past couple of years, I think. And I think that's just due to the release of iOS, and the amount of developers coming into the community has just been a lot larger very recently.
It's going to be interesting to see where this goes, because with OO programming, there's a certain safety. You know, you can pull a team together and you can guarantee that everybody's going to be comfortable with the OO style. You know, OO has its own overhead complexity and risks, and there are different programming paradigms that support a better implementation and more flexibility. However, there's obviously a risk in adopting those because not everyone's familiar with them. So, there are interesting challenges around, you know, when planning projects architecturally, making the right choices that not just suit the solution but also suit the team, I suppose.
I think the more kind of paradigms that you expose yourself to, the more flexible you can be with those kind of things. So I think the more developers that can use this kind of stuff, and you can have the tendency, especially if you've been using object-oriented programming for a really long time, is to sort of over-architect your programs in that way and make it more complicated than it needs to be. And functional reactive programming can help you to, even if you don't use it in that project, it can help you to think in a certain way that makes architecting your programs in a better way. So thinking about things like lots of state in your program can often lead to lots of problems, because if that state gets out of sync or stale, then that can cause lots of bugs down the line. Whereas just even thinking in that functional reactive way, even if you're not using a functional reactive API, could help you to code better in just every app that you're coding.
Maybe this is a stupid question, but you know, when I hear this discussion of, you know, the risks around, you know, in OO we're storing state in objects, and particularly with multi-threaded applications, when things are running on the background, there's a risk of mutability that can cause a crash. And ultimately, you know, as developers, we want to create apps that are, you know, stable and easy to work with. But you know, the ongoing evolution of the devices that we're building for, you know, they're multi-core, you know, multi-threaded platforms. And so in some senses, is this resurgence of functional programming a response to the fact that often we are working on multiple threads and we want to, you know, make sure that we're not creating crashy apps, right? We want to have some sense of certainty that what we've got working on a background thread isn't going to, you know, misbehave.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think this move in iOS in particular towards this kind of programming paradigm and the interest in it is all of these things, like you mentioned, MVM, MVVM and Viper and insert your favorite acronym here. There are lots, all of these different things are responses to some kind of pain that we experience when we're trying to build our application. You know, we want to solve a problem, we hit some kind of wall, or we solve it once, but then a year down the track when we're still working on the same code and tons of features have been added and it's gotten really complex and you can't even remember what you were even thinking about when you first wrote it, like there's a lot of potential complexity in the software that we're writing. Even when you are on a team who's all comfortable with the core ideas in object-oriented programming, designing things with classes and objects and messages and that kind of thing, when I'm approaching how should I structure this code, how should I design this code, what I often like to think about is in terms of I'm going to ask a question of my code so that I can, you know, get the answer that's correct, you know. So how do I want this code to behave so that it will solve my problem? So it's often in that design process, it's about working out how to phrase that question so that I can get the right answer when I'm writing my code. And what I've found is that when you're designing an object, so, you know, object is some data and some behavior that represents what that object can do, how it behaves, what it does when you use it. And in Objective-C, the way we make use of an object's behavior is by sending it a message and getting some kind of a response from it. But that's really the core of the idea. Now write a program, you know. So like, there's actually a lot of complexity and a lot of different things at different levels that we've got to solve. And asking the question, how do I want this object to behave to solve my problem for me, can actually be really difficult to answer. So in the reactive way of designing that, because we've got this constraint of working out a way of modeling something as a stream of values over time, I find it much easier to think of that question, like how do I want network call or this validation or this login functionality or whatever to behave. I find it easy to answer that question because the tools that I have to express the solution are more focused. And so once you get that kind of intuition for what the tools are and allow you to do, it becomes easier to make progress in your design because you end up just thinking about the problems inherent in what you're trying to solve rather than getting yourself into trouble with really complicated object interactions and callback blocks and background threads and foreground threads and UI and network and Bluetooth and motion data and all the different things that you've got to deal with in the app.
Yeah, and I think that's going back to your question, Ben, of why it's become such a popular thing recently is, for us at least, the app that we started working on earlier this year was, I mean, we first started looking at it and we just looked and thought, this is going to be an absolute nightmare to write. There's so much happening. There's lots of asynchronous calls, background processing. We're working with iBeacons and lots of network calls as well. The entire app was going to be pretty much every screen had at least one or two network calls. So that when we were looking at that, to design that in an object-oriented way would have been possible, obviously, but I don't think we would have come out with the outcome that we have now if we'd had stuck with that and not explored Reactive Cocoa, because just recently we're kind of wrapping up the project at the moment, and a lot of the problems we're encountering in testing is that, oh, there's a slight error here or a change that needs to be made in the logic, and having to do that in this huge monolith of horrible callbacks and asynchronous things is actually pretty easy with Reactive Cocoa because it's set out as you know, steps of things to do. We can just add a step in the middle and it's not a problem. But if that was in a traditional imperative paradigm, it might be that we have to change six or seven files just to make that one small change. So it's been, yeah, especially towards the end of the project. I mean, it was a bit of a battle to start with when we were learning, but it's definitely turned out to be a great idea for us.
And just to give you a real concrete little example of one of those things that we've solved recently. So we're monitoring the user's proximity to a Bluetooth beacon over time. And that's great. You know, we know when we're near the beacon, when we're away from the beacon. And that allows us to do some interesting functionality based on that. But what we were finding in practice was, even if you sat in one space, you know, you're a meter away from this beacon and you sat there for 10 minutes, the app would regularly report that it had actually dropped out and come back in and dropped out and come back in. So something just to do with the way Bluetooth works, to do with power levels and stuff like that, we were seeing this intermittent dropouts. And we're like, oh, gee, how are we going to fix this? Turns out it was more or less one line of code with Reactive Cocoa. And all it was whenever it drops out, just don't do anything yet, right? Let's wait for 30 seconds and see if it comes back in again. And then if it does, then basically we've just subtly transformed this stream of are we in or out into little dropouts that are less than 30 seconds, just disappear completely now. So we've smoothed out our values with one line of code and now the app feels infinitely more responsible and reliable because we're not getting these little dropouts anymore. And adding that timing element, I have a feeling it would have been a lot more complicated than one line of code in any other programming toolkit that I've used before. So
yeah, adding things like throttling, delays, anything that's based on time really is just an absolute nightmare if you're not using a framework that enables it like Reactive Cocoa. Using things like timers or dispatching onto different threads and things like that can just be just horrible to code. And especially if you're trying to insert that into some existing logic, it could just be take a lot more work.
Right. Well, it seems like, you know, this has really spread like wildfire internally at Outware, at least. We have seen, you know, on a lot of new projects that have been kicking off in the recent months, Reactive Cocoa adoption has been huge. And I know I'm excited and getting my teeth into it, but it does feel like, you know, entering a foreign land. So you can expect a lot more stupid questions from me in time. Is there anything else we want to cover off before we wrap up, guys?
Just in terms of getting started with Reactive Cocoa in particular, if you're an iOS or Mac developer or curious at all, Reactive Cocoa as a open source project actually has a really good amount of high quality documentation just right there in the project. So if you find the project on GitHub, they've got a really good introductory documentation and then a whole folder of different things like here's the design principles, here's an overview of all the different operations that you can perform on these signals and the way you can combine them and stuff and links to other resources as well. So I'd start by taking a look at the project on GitHub.
Definitely. And also it's good to note that Reactive Cocoa does have some differences to other Rx libraries, and they're also explained in the documentation as well. So if you're coming from a different Rx library like Rx Java or one of the .NET frameworks, it's probably really well explained in there. There's slight differences, especially in Reactive Cocoa 3 and Swift. There's they have kind of diverged from the standard Rx practice, but I think it fits better with how it's used in iOS, and it's a really great framework.
And in learning programming in functional terms, do you think there's a need to rewind back and, you know, let's get started with Haskell or what we've got available to us in the iOS land already in terms of Objective-C or Swift? Is that adequate, a sufficient enough environment to get that basis, that core understanding?
Yeah, I think Swift in particular it just really does lend itself to that style of programming, and it has a lot of the power that you get from Haskell. A lot of those functions, and you can sort of write a program entirely in that style, but we do have the constraint of working with Cocoa, which, you know, it's very an object-orientated framework, and we sort of have to fit in with that. But it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future with Swift, and if that, you know, becomes the main major programming language for iOS, and see what Apple does with that.
Awesome. Well, thank you, guys. I think we need to have a little shout out to Alex Bird, our producer today. What was his consideration that Reactive Cocoa might be? Anyone remind me?
I think it was that it was a reactive nuclear cup of coffee. Hot chocolate, sorry.
Nuclear hot chocolate. He thought today's episode may be a discussion of nuclear hot chocolate. Maybe we'll save that one for next week because that does sound pretty stimulating in its own right, doesn't it? Thank you, Adam, Sean, and James. What an episode. Looking forward to getting into reactive programming.
Thanks,
Ben. See you again next time.
Thank you.